You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 18 June. Bank of England rate decision expected this afternoon. No change. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios, Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Petli Radenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors. Fuel prices heading lower. Hikes are certainly over. Are consumer stocks worth a look? We're going to chat with CEO of Premier Group. Strong full-year results. New plants, lower input costs, helping margins. And then Sean Ashton, Head of Investments, Private Clients by Old Mutual. Earnings are the real deal, not headlines. And earnings are coming in strong. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, SA's next inflation shock may begin with rain that does not fall. Inflation no longer only a demand problem, increasingly a resilience problem. Bloomberg Fed's whoosh signals revamp, but offers little substance on rates. Avoided giving any signals on its preferred rate path, but Fed officials' new projections show expect to raise rates at least once this year. Morning markets, US red, S&P down 1.2%, NASDAQ off 1%. The East is mixed, Sydney up 0.2%, Tokyo 1.75% higher, Hong Kong almost 2% down, Tencent 1.5% down. Commodities, all red, gold futures, 4,341, Brent 78.32, platinum 1,760, palladium 1,336. The rand is 16.32. Bitcoin 64,200. Top 40 opening call. Red open 750 points or 0.7% lower.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petli Radenhuis. He, of course, from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petli, always appreciate the early morning. As I said in the intro there, we've got oil in free fall, which is going to take, I was having a look at petrol, diesel prices, respectively, 2 Rand 50, 5 Rand down for July. Rate hikes, maybe they're over. My question was, are consumer stocks then worth a look? But it occurred to me, maybe we're looking in the wrong place. Maybe we should be keeping a much closer eye on oil and watching where that is going. How are you looking at this, which is maybe early days of positive developments?
Good morning. And a bit of relief, hey?
Yes, jeepers.
I think it was great for the Sasol trade, but the Sasol trade, I think, I think maybe at around 180 or 160, it could be interesting again. But for now, we're not charging at it. But there are other trades, right? So, for example, some of our favorite trades at this stage is Pick and Pay. We think that is an overlooked little gem. Yes, it's had a lot of bad media. I don't want to go into too much details. We don't have enough time for that. But it's potential takeout target. It's a bit of an underdog at the moment, if you will. Positions that we hold are both Pick and Pay and Spar, right? So we think that, yes, potentially retailers, potentially property stocks, the locals are where our focus is at the moment because, the post-war trade, if you will, the war – if the deal is signed tomorrow and if no, crazy other news comes out, as we've seen, I think we saw 37 announcements that a deal is imminent before eventually announcement 38 actually was true, right? We also quite like local banks. So, for example, Nedbank was something that we pointed out the other day. I think the locals is kind of where to look. Particularly in the sort of more cash-orientated retailers. So these would be food retailers and potentially like Mr. Price and those types of those types of retailers.
I get your point. I was having a look at Clicks, and I like your thinking. There's some beaten down that are going to get some potential here. And the Clicks has got an interesting chart at the same time. So I want to change track entirely to SpaceX. And a simple question, watching, shorting, buying, holding, what's your view on it? I see it was a little bit weaker, and that's why I'm asking you. I can tell you where I am. I am watching from the sidelines. I found that it's a comfortable space to be right now.
Well, it's not SpaceX, right? So we, yeah, largely agree. We didn't participate in the IPO.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting situation. There is very little free float, some $75 billion out of one in now almost $2 trillion company. So the problem is that we've seen kind of Musk do this in the past, and we think that he probably will do it again, where you use call options to force banks to buy the hedges. There's not lots of, or in other words, you force banks to buy the equity to, you know, support your call option or to cover the stock for the call option, which creates forced buying. There's very little free float compared to the overall market cap. And those who participated in the IPO are locked in until the first earnings are released. So there's almost no supply of stock. So can it keep going? Yeah. Sure, probably. But when that supply comes to market and only, and those who are locked into the IPO can sell in like 60 days or whatever it is, yeah, we're curious to see once those earnings are out and the dust settles, what it's going to be. I mean, if you look at Amazon and SpaceX are valued at about the same level, Amazon earns, I think, $738 billion in earnings. SpaceX does 18. So there's a bit of a valuation gap there, right? Look, SpaceX has a surprisingly wide variety of products. They don't just make rockets. They also provide internet, and they also do AI, and they also have, you know, social media platforms and all the rest. We probably think that this is going to be a push to merge Tesla into SpaceX.
That's certainly coming at a point.
That's probably going to come at a point. So for now, yeah, watching from the sidelines, it's the sideshow. It is hugely entertaining. I think I saw some memes earlier this morning, actually, where it's like a picture of a guy looking a bit shell-shocked, and it's like Warren Buffett watching Elon Musk make 70 years worth of profits in a day, you know?
on a stock that is 27 times 2028 earnings. It is wild. But hey, look, kudos to him, as you say. Yeah, took Buffett 70 years. Musk did it on Friday. We'll leave it there. Petli Ratnay, Serenia Capital Advisors, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn. Going back to that oil and Iranian wars, is it time for consumer stocks? Petli has a few on his list. You get to have your vote, your say on LinkedIn. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Kobus Gertenbach. He is CEO Premier Group. Results here in March, revenue up 6.6%, HEPS up 27.7%. Kobus, before we get into the year's numbers, the RFG Holdings came in March, so it was there for a couple of weeks. When do you see it becoming earnings accretive? What's your synergy number and timeline that you're looking at with the acquisition?
Yes, Simon, we got our Competition Commission approval, which was the last outstanding condition, on the 11th of March. And so we ended up consolidating 21 days worth of trading of RFG in the numbers that we've reported. The impact on our numbers was immaterial.
Yeah.
So it hasn't really contributed in any meaningful way to our performance. So the full benefit of that acquisition will come through in the next financial year. And yes, we are making good progress with our synergies. We certainly have made good progress with consolidating supply, looking at combining our insurance programs, harmonizing our banking and relationships, and getting the rates on that down. So really across the board, making good progress with all the synergies that we're trying to identify. I mean, some of the synergies will just take longer. We're combining our merchandising structures on the 1st of July, and we're sort of looking to combine the long life part of the RFG portfolio onto our logistics platform from the 1st of October. So some of those synergies we'll probably see most of the benefit only in the next financial year, but we're certainly looking to get going on all of those fronts.
Gotcha. Let's touch to these numbers. Revenue up 6.6, HEPS almost 28% higher. Obvious margin expansion here. Some of that coming, we saw significant deflation in maize, which is a big input for yourselves. That certainly helps margins. You're also putting some of that back to customers with pricing.
Yes, I mean, we've pushed through most of the reduction in the raw material maize to the consumer. I mean, it's a highly competitive, very fragmented market. And if you don't do that, you'll simply not sell your product. And so we've certainly pushed through as much as we can of that reduction in raw maize prices. I think we've also seen a sort of slight sideways to downward movement in global wheat prices over the period. But ultimately, our price inflation for the full year now begins. Division in Mobike was zero. So all the growth in revenue in that division all came from growth in volume.
Ah, gotcha. Your new bakery is up and running during the year, not fully ramped up as per the results, still getting to that point. Benefits there. I imagine this gives you better pricing. I'm sure it gives you better availability. I mean, you're just going from what was a very, very old bakery to state of the art, and benefits abound.
You know, I think first and foremost, we get a much more consistent, high quality product, just a better baked bread and a better tasting product that comes out of that bakery on a much more consistent basis. We've obviously, while we had it shut down and the construction was going on, we had a lot of operational inefficiencies where we were baking at an old bakery in Pretoria and then trucking the bread into our Aeroton site for distribution from there. And also, you know, the new plant just runs more efficient on electricity, on energy supply into the ovens. And the economies of scale of that facility now designed to bake 16,000 loaves an hour versus the 6,000 that it previously baked really is quite a step change for that facility, yes.
That is a giant part. Millbake, which is the big part of the group, it's around 80-odd% of revenue. If we look forward with RFG Holdings in the picture in the years ahead, how much will Millbake still be of the sort of group revenue structure numbers?
Yeah, Mobike will decline to about 2/3. Okay. And the RFG portfolio together with our candy and our personal care business will make up the other third of the revenue then.
You mentioned Candy Sugar Confectionery, and we chatted at mid-year. It was having a good first half of the year. Did that momentum continue?
Yes, we certainly did. I mean, we've grown the scale of that facility quite a lot in the last year. We managed to manufacture a few more products on some of our private label contracts that have really contributed meaningfully to our business. And so it really is in a different space. I mean, we've also recently seen some of the competitors, I think, that have been in the press that have exited or shut down their operations. And, you know, I think going forward, that also provides more opportunity for us to gain more.
Now, how discretionary is a sugar confectionery? And I can't work it out because in one sense, a chocolate or a licorice or something, a candy is almost, it's a cheapish purchase. So in times of tough, it might fit. But of course, maybe it slips through the cracks. And I'm thinking particularly, I mean, we've seen the wallet under pressure with the fuel pricing.
Yeah, I think that people still have to indulge in something from time to time. And it's still, at the end of the day, a relatively affordable indulgement. And, you know, I think that if we look at areas where we've grown a lot, especially within the Woolworths business, the consumer there is a little bit less price sensitive in terms of the cost of foodstuffs. Yeah. And so it hasn't been as badly affected as, you know, I guess other parts are lower LSM levels. But make no mistake, I mean, you know, I think things are tough and, you know, you have to really run your business efficiently at scale and consistently execute in order to actually make your margins and continue to defend your market share.
And of course, that fuel price increasing, which I mentioned, has impacted yourselves. I mean, you're delivering thousands and, well, no, hundreds of thousands of loaves per day. That's coming down, but that must have hurt post the period end a fair bit as we saw those diesel increases.
Yes. Well, I think it impacts you in three ways. I mean, the first way is that it impacts you directly in terms of your actual own fuel costs.
Yeah.
But then we also immediately got notices of increases in packaging material, especially plastic-based packaging material that was immediately impacted by it. And then thirdly, I think, you know, if in my calculations, the additional cost of fuel probably took around 12 to 15 billion rand of disposable income out of the pockets of the consumers towards funding the additional fuel cost. And, you know, those are quite actually massive shocks in terms of consumer disposable income that we don't see often. I can just hope that with the peace accord that seems to be getting traction, that we will see a reversal of that trend very shortly in the market.
Yeah, but certainly the commodity prices seem to be pointing to that. Agreed. Let's hope it holds. We'll leave it there. Kobus Hettenbach, CEO, Premier Group. Appreciate the time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Telling now is Sean Ashton. He's head of investments at private clients by Old Mutual. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. Great piece you wrote recently. You talk around all the screaming headlines that we see out there. Pretty much across the board, they are scary headlines. Broadly, though, markets are moving higher. You make the case that they really are being driven by strong earnings, regardless of what the headlines are saying. You say you're seeing some of the best earnings you've seen potentially in your investment career.
Good morning, Simon, and morning to your listeners. Yes, it's a lot that you've unpacked there, and you've summarized it very well, quite quickly. But I think the long and the short of it is that we're in an investment boom, certainly in the US, that I haven't witnessed in my career. It's obviously centered on AI. Many listeners will be aware of that. But what's quite notable is that when we look at the aggregate earnings growth of the S&P 500, expectations for this year are about 26% year-on-year growth. And if you look back over the last, say, 25 years or so, pretty much from the turn of the millennium to now, what's notable about that is that it's occurring in the context of not being recovery off a recessionary period. So when we look at historical periods of very strong earnings growth comparable to that number or better, it's always come off the back of a recessionary recovery. And in this case, we've had 2 years of pretty decent growth even prior to this. So it stands out in the sense that it is the strongest in the last 25 years that has not occurred coming off a recession. And that's notable. So this is genuine investment-led, very strong earnings growth that we think could continue for a while.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and that's a big number. I mean, 26 is a big, big number. Make no mistake about that. But it does what it means. And I've seen this in some of the stocks I've been having a look at, is that stocks have been running, but with that sort of earnings behind them. And to be clear, that's the average. So we've got a bunch doing better than that. Valuations, and there's many ways to value. I appreciate that. But broadly, we can say valuations aren't as scary as some of the elevated prices would lead us to suggest.
This is what's notable, Simon. And look, it's been a very narrow market in terms of leadership. It's basically been semiconductors and not much else. So your picks and shovels of the AI boom have been the ones to be the first order beneficiaries. That's obvious. We're actually looking for the next leaders. It's not clear what those are yet. But we're doing a lot of work on that. But certainly, if you look at the semiconductor space, you've had many stocks that have gone up hundreds of percents. But curiously, their PE multiples have not, in cases, they've actually come off over the last 12 months or so. And that tells you the extent of earnings upgrades that we've seen in this space. So, and even if you look at the S&P 500 in aggregate, PE multiples are well off their highs. I think we're trading at somewhere around 20 or 21 times next 12-month earnings. So I hear this term AI bubble bandied around a lot. It's certainly not showing up in the valuation multiples. The questions that we would ask ourselves longer term is, how long does the earnings cycle last for? Are the margins sustainable? Is the CapEx cycle sustainable? Those are the better questions to be asking.
That's a great point, because I mean, there are always risks, but the assumption that just because markets have gone up makes them too expensive is not necessarily the point. But there is an argument to be said. Kind of get those tripwires for a phrase that we can keep an eye on. If margins start to shrink, if CapEx suddenly collapses, whatever it might be, that could be that warning signals.
Absolutely. Look, and I think the big kind of hairy question we're asking ourselves at the moment, and you've seen it in the valuations of the so-called hyperscalers, companies like Microsoft, Meta, Amazon, Alphabet, etc. Oracle is probably a more recent one you can throw in the mix. These companies that have transitioned from very capital-light, platform businesses into extremely capital-intensive infrastructure businesses. Now, it looks to us like the returns on capital are good, but the point is that there's a lot of capital being deployed. We think that group of companies will spend something of the order of, it'll certainly be, call it $750 billion on capital investment this year. And I'm sure more north of a trillion next year. I mean, these are crazy numbers. We're talking dollars here. And the question to us is, do the returns on capital remain competitive in the outer years as the base continues to get bigger and bigger? And ultimately, what does that mean for the ratings of these companies? Because they're very different beasts to what they were a few years ago when they were buying back stock and just managing their capital bases down. Now they're doing the opposite.
Yeah, that is a great point. It has fundamentally changed. A last question, to go back to your point, you talked around the next leaders. And, you know, I sometimes lie awake at night stressing that I'm not finding them. The flip side is, and you said you're still looking for them. We don't need them. We don't need to know what they are today. We can find them in time. We can change our mind about it. And what I'm trying to say is there's some flexibility in who it's going to be and how we're going to respond.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because it's all about flexibility. Mm-hmm. And often the market tells you where to look.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, and certainly it's not obvious outside of semis right now, but I think what will start to show up is, you know, relative strength. You know, stocks that start to outperform consistently in a new sector or subsector. And so the leaders will show their hand. I think that's the key. And we've got to be on the lookout for them.
I like that. The leaders will show their hand. They will do. We just need to make sure that we are looking, because we will see it when it comes. We'll leave it there. That's Sean Ashton, Head of Investments, Private Clients for Old Mutual. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Kim Pochita yesterday. She's an author. She's a certified financial planner. She's a coach. We were talking around where your money goes, especially those small and often plentiful subscriptions. Do you regularly check those subscriptions and cancel what you don't need or don't use? Over 2/3 said yes, frequently. The rest were split between, nope, let me do it now, and the rest of you saying, you know what all your spending is. You are on top. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabuchle and Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests, for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, the Frank Wealth Index.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.